Okay, well, thank you for inviting me, and I'm really sorry I ended up not actually being able to come. I was very much planning to. So this talk is about two papers that appeared over the last couple of years, as well as work with Miroslav Rabchak and Eliza Lepage, who I think are both Perimeter alums. And also with Ivan Danilenko, Peng Zhao, Michael McGreen, and David Shander. Okay, let's see if I can change slides. Yeah, so in 98, Kolinov showed that one can associate to every link in three-dimensional space a complex of bibrated vector spaces, such that the cohomology of this complex categorifies the Jones polynomial. Kolinov's homology groups, moreover, turned out to be themselves linking variants, so they're independent of the projection you use to define them. Kolinov's construction fits into the program, categorification program of Crane and Frankel, Igor Frankel. A simple toy model to keep in mind is a Riemannian manifold M, whose Euler characteristic is categorified by the cohomology groups of the Durand complex. From physics perspective, the Euler characteristic is the partition function of supersymmetric quantum mechanics with our manifold M as a target space. The collection of vector spaces may be provided by Mohs theory approach to supersymmetric quantum mechanics as perturbative supersymmetric ground states indexed by the Fermi number. The action of the supercharge Q on perturbative ground states gives the maps in the complex, and they're generated by instantons. So Q defines the differential as dispersed to zero. So again, the key thing in this Mohs theory approach is that the maps are generated by instantons. So in 2013, Ben Webster, the water loop, show that there's an abstract algebraic framework for categorification of quantum link invariants associated with an arbitrary Lie algebra based on what I called KLRW algebras, the algebras generalizing algebras wrote down earlier by Kovanov and Lauda and also by Roquier. Webster's categorification, Kovanov's categorification of the Jones polynomial is explicit and easily calculable. However, Webster, the theory that Webster formulated is intractable. There's nothing you can calculate. Despite the successes of the program, well, Ben can correct me, but I think that's true. Despite the successes of the program, one is missing a fundamental principle that explains why categorification is possible. The construction really has no right to exist. Unlike in our toy example of categorification of the Euler characteristic of Riemannian manifold, Kolinov's construction and its generalizations do not come from either geometry or physics in any unified way. The problem that Kolinov initiated is to find a general framework for construction of link homology groups that works uniformly for all Lie algebras that explains what link homology groups are and why they exist. So I'll explain that Kolinov's construction also has origin in physics. One then generalizes to all gauge groups, just like the Jones polynomial does. The solution to the problem turns out to come from a new relation between homological mirror symmetry and representation theory, whose origins are really in string theory. A homological mirror symmetry relates categories of boundary conditions in two-dimensional sigma models, and it naturally gives rise to a host of homological invariants. Most of the time, though, the invariants that it gives rise to aren't of any particular interest outside of the specific problem at hand. For example, if you study the quintic. What we'll discover here is a new family of mirror pairs of manifolds where homological mirror symmetry does lead to interesting new invariants. And in particular, it solves the knot categorification problem. Transcendence theory, which Witten showed leads to quantum link invariants, is a striking example of interacting quantum field theory that is solvable exactly. Its solvability turns out to carry over, or perhaps come from, the homological world. The sigma models that arise, as we'll see, are extremely special, and their very special feature features make the resulting theory explicitly solvable. We'll be able to solve problems that we cannot do in a general setting. So our signal models describe theory on two-dimensional defects of six-dimensional 2-0 theory that arises in string theory. The relation to representation theory may be anticipated by the fact that possible 0-2 theories in six dimensions are labeled by a choice of a simplest Lie algebra, G, and that its codimension 4 defects that you need for knots are labeled by its weights. The fact that the six-dimensional 0-2 theory is central to the problem was conjectured by Aguri and Vafa in 1999, same year that Kwano's work arose, although it was actually connected to Kwano's work by Gukov, Schwartz, and Vafa in 2004, so some years later. There is a six or five-dimensional approach to the problem that's being developed by Witten together with Gaiotto and Moore and others. So we will be describing the same physics just from perspective of the two-dimensional theories on the defects that give rise to knots. And this is as much as I'm going to say about string theory and stuff. So in 88, Witten showed that the Jones polynomial comes from transimous theory with gauge group based on Lie algebra SU2. In the same paper, he also showed that underlying transimous theory based on an arbitrary Lie algebra at level K is a kappa is a two-dimensional conformal field theory with affine Lie algebra symmetry. The Hilbert space of transimous theory is the space of conformal blocks of the affine Lie algebra on a Riemann surface where Wilson lines that puncture the Riemann surface translate into the surface of vertex operators. Usually, to get invariants of knots in R3 or in S3, one would start with a Riemann surface, which is a complex plane with punctures. As we'll see, in our setting, it's actually better to take the Riemann surface to be an infinite punctured cylinder. So this is better for purposes of connecting to geometry and understanding categorification. But this way, the theory will be able to describe links in R2 times S1, not just in R3. Now, one can characterize conformal blocks using vertex operators and so on. A closer trial setting is to describe them as solutions of the equation discovered by Knižnik and Zamolodjikov in 84. We'll need a trigonometric version of the KZ equation because the Riemann surface we chose is an infinite cylinder. But those are details from this perspective. By varying the positions of punctures on the Riemann surface as a function of transimous time, we get a colored braid and monodromy problem, namely monodromy of the KZ equation along the path in parameter space corresponding to the braid. Those monodromy matrices can be found explicitly in terms of R matrices of the quantum group associated to G. That monodromy matrices come from quantum groups was observed first in the works of Tsuchiya and Kanya and was proven by Drinfeld and by Kaslan and Lustig. And of course, it forms the backbone of Reshetikin and Turayev approach. Any link invariant can be represented as a matrix element of a braiding matrix between conformal blocks that correspond to caps and cups. The conformal blocks that describe those caps and cups that you need to get links are obtained by bringing together pairs of vertex operators colored by complex conjugate representations and fusing them to identity, to trivial representation. So both fusion and braiding in conformal field theory play an important role in getting knot invariants. To categorify quantum knot invariants, one would like to associate to space of conformal blocks that you get at a fixed time slice, a bigraded category, which in addition to the Fermi number grading, has an additional grading associated to Q. In fact, we'll have necessarily, since our Riemann surface is an infinite cylinder, we'll necessarily have more gradings because you also need to be able to capture holonomies of transimous theory around this one. To braids, you'd like to associate functors between the categories corresponding to the top and the bottom. To links, you'd like to associate a vector space whose elements are morphisms between objects of the categories and the top and the bottom up to the action of the braiding function. And Moreover, you'd like to do all that in a way that recovers quantum knot invariance upon decategorification. So one typically proceeds in coming up with a category, and then you work to prove that decategorification gives quantum knot invariance set out to categorical. The geometric solutions to the knot categorification problem that I'll describe share the virtue that this second step is automatic. So using the logical equation and its solutions turn out to have a geometric realization, in fact, a pair of them. So this will be the starting point for categorification of quantum link invariance. So we'll specialize the Lie algebra for the rest of this talk to be simply laced, and so it's of ADE types. There is a generalization to non-simply laced Lie algebras, and in fact also to Lie super algebras, but largely they will want a feature. So Knishin's zomological equation has a geometric counterpart. In the world of mirror symmetry, there is an equally fundamental differential equation, which is sometimes called the quantum differential equation. So mirror symmetry, to remind you, relates pairs of Calabi-Yau manifolds, which vibrations by dual tori over a common base. And it also exchanges complex or B-type structures and symplectic or Kähler or A-type structures of the mirror. The quantum differential equation is a linear differential equation for a vector-valued function over the moduli space of either A-type structures of X or B-type structures of its mirror. The name quantum differential equation comes from symplectic or A-type geometry, where the coefficients are computed by quantum multiplication by divisor clauses. This quantum multiplication is a product on the cohomology of X defined by Gromov-Witten theory that counts maps from sphere with three punctures to X. The first term of the quantum multiplication is the classical product in cohomology, and the subsequent terms are quantum corrections. These kinds of amplitudes were some of the first that were considered in the context of mirror symmetry. So both the equation and its monotomy problem played a central role, quite literally starting with the very first paper on mirror symmetry by Candelas and Delaus. So solutions to the quantum differential equation live in a finite dimensional vector space associated to the manifold, which is spanned by K-theory classes of springs. So from perspective of X, where the differential equation itself with respect to eta moduli or Kähler moduli. Solutions are obtained by counting holomorphic maps of all degrees from a domain curve that one should best think of as an infinite cigar with a circle boundary of infinity. We'll get a specific solution of the equation by choosing a B-type brain as a boundary condition at infinity, even though the rest of the Riemann surface lives in the A-type world. But the key fact that you can combine both comes from the fact that the Riemann surface itself is an infinite cigar, so you can do that without breaking supersymmetry. So the solution that you get depends on the brain only through its K-theory class and not the details of what brain you actually have. So the Kz equation not only has the same flavor as the quantum differential equation, under certain conditions, they coincide. On the knot theory side, we'll want to do what we did. Namely, we'll take the Riemann surface to be an infinite functional cylinder. This enriches the theory, as I said, so we'll be able to get links in R2 times S1. On the geometric side, we want to take the target to be a very special Calabi-Yau manifold, which is best described as the moduli space of G monopoles on R3. The transimus gauge group is related to G, the monopole group, by land lengths or electric magnetic type duality. In transimus theory, we'll view knots in three-dimensional space as paths of heavy particles, charged electrically under the Simons gauge group. In this geometric description, the same heavy particles appear as Dirac monopoles of the Langlands dual group. The fact that the magnetic description is what is needed was key to the works of Witten. The manifold X will need the modular space of monopole, G monopoles in R3, played an important role in mathematics before. In the context of geometric Langlands correspondence, it's known as a transversal slice in the Fine-Grossmannian of G. To physicists, the same X is a Coulomb branch of a certain three-dimensional Clebier gauge theory. We'll prefer to think about it as moduli space of monopoles, since it makes the features of the theory we'll need most manifest. The monopole moduli space is parameterized in part by positions of some number of smooth monopoles on two particle type monopoles on R3, whereas the positions of singular Dirac monopoles are fixed, and they determine the metric on M, on X. So to get the KZ equation to coincide, how many of which kinds of monopoles do you choose depends on which conformal blocks you want to study. To get a KZ equation to coincide with a quantum differential equation, we'll always want to place all the singular Dirac monopoles at the origin of a complex plane in R3. Then rotations of this complex plane are an isometry of X, and that's important. It's important because the parameter Q of knot theory will be related to keeping track of charges under the symmetry. The fact that quantum group invariants become interesting only when Q is not equal to 1 has a geometric counterpart. The monopole moduli space has more symmetries than a typical Calabi-Yau. So the quantum multiplication differs from classical only as long as Q is not equal to 1. This is because our X, being the monopole moduli space, is hyperkähler. The KZ equation coincides with the quantum differential equation of X, provided we actually work with respect to a larger torus of symmetries that X has, which the extra covariant parameters encode the holonomies of transimons gauge fields around the S1 in the Riemann surface. So the fact that the trigonometric KZ equation of the affine Lie algebra has a geometric interpretation as the quantum differential equation is a recent theorem of Ivan Danilenko, who is a postdoc in Berkeley. He proved this in his thesis. So it follows that which solution of the KZ equation we get is determined by Joseph B. Tybrain on X, our monopole moduli space, as the boundary condition at infinity of our infinitely long cigar. So the boundary conditions form a category, and the category of beta boundary conditions working equivariantly with respect to its large torus T that includes Q and parameters associated to holonomies is known to mathematicians as the Dirac category of T equivariant coherent sheaves on X. Objects of this category are complexes of coherent sheaves, or more simply, beta brains. So positions of punctures on the Riemann surface coincide with A-type or Kähler moduli of X. It follows that a braid has a geometric interpretation as a path in complexified Kähler moduli, since these moduli of X are the relative positions of punctures. A central expectation in mirror symmetry is the fact that monodromy of the quantum differential equation is categorified by a functor acting on the category of brains, which transports the category along the path, more precisely transports its objects, and which is an equivalence of categories. In general, in the context of for categories of B-type brains, this is a very, very difficult thing to prove. In the context of A-type brains, it's far easier to understand. It comes from categorification of Picard-Lefschetz monodromies by higher categories, and these are theorems of Seidel. So for A-type rings, it's essentially obvious. But for B-type rings, it's a very hard thing to prove. So in settings relevant to us, the proof was given by Bezrukhovnikov and Kukov using quantization characteristic P, and I believe Andrei told you on Monday about that. Now, from physics perspective, the fact that this should be the case has been understood since early 90s at works of Chakotay and Vafa. Namely, in our setting, it goes as follows. Physically, Bray group acts in the sigma model on the cigar by letting the moduli of the theory vary near the boundary at infinity, where the direction along the Euclidean cigar coincides with the time along the Bray. It follows from this that chopping off the cigar near the infinity, that the sigma model on the annulus would moduli the Bray according to the Bray, computes the matrix element of the monodromy, quantum group element, between a pair of rings. Sigma model on the very same Euclidean annulus, with time viewed as running around the circle, computes, per definition, the supertrace, which is the Euler characteristic of the supercharge preserved by the two rings. That supercharge, given that our rings are B-type rings, is the very basic ingredient in the category of B-type rings, namely the space of morphisms between a pair of rings. So for any pair of rings, you get a greater vector space, the space of morphisms, the homes between a pair of rings at the boundaries, whose Euler characteristic is a braiding matrix element. And a nice fact here is that that was also explained in the recent works by Gayota, Moore, and Witten, is that you can simplify a life to push, without changing the theory, push all of the variational moduli to one end of the interval, so that you simply compute the vanilla space of morphisms between two brains in a theory which is of a standard type with moduli constant over the interval. Anyhow, we understand that the category of coherent sheaves, or B-type rings, manifestly categorifies quantum group matrix elements. Now, we'd like to extend this to link invariants. But for this, you need to find objects which lead to conformal blocks in which pairs of vertex operators fuse the trivial representation. In essence, to categorify braiding, we didn't really need to do very much. So, however, to get links, you need to understand which rings lead to caps and cups. So for this, we need to understand the geometric interpretation of fusion in terms of category of B-type rings. The fact that the question even makes sense is a special one of the many special features of the manifolds we study. So as you bring a pair of singular monopoles close together, a manifold X develops a singularity where a whole collection of cycles in general vanishes. The distance between the singular monopoles you're bringing together controls their size. The singularities that occur are due to monopole bubbling phenomena as explained by Kapustin and Witten. Namely, when a pair of singular monopoles come together, a number of smooth monopoles can bubble off of them and disappear to leave behind a single singular monopole of lower charge. If you like to think about X as a Coulomb branch of the 3D gauge theory, then this is related by Higgsing, sequences of Higgsings. So anyway, now, the great virtue of fusion in conformal field theory is that it diagonalizes braiding. Now, in the world of mirror symmetry, it was clear from the early days that it's essentially impossible to diagonalize, even in the very simplest of examples, to diagonalize the action of braiding on the category of rings. The closest you can get to it And what I showed is the interpretation of fusion in geometry is existence of what's called a perverse filtration. These kinds of perverse filtrations were dreamt up by Chuang and Roquier as the right structure to describe the action of grading on derived categories. In particular, the action of grading that comes from variations of Bridgelet-type stability conditions. And this is exactly the kind that arises here, for reasons I don't quite have time to explain. But it's built into the theory. So anyway, one learns from this that while generic conformal blocks, while you can't in general diagonalize the action of grading on Hall category, and so generic conformal blocks, which eigenvalues of grading don't actually come from nice objects in your derived category, the conformal blocks that are caps and cups do. And they come from brains that have a simple geometric meaning. Structure shapes, their brains wrapped in vanishing cycles or structure shapes of vanishing cycles that are known as minuscule Grassmannians. An important thing I failed to mention here is that in order for our X to be smooth, you need the representations coloring the knots to be minuscule. Only such representations will enter our story. And the vanishing cycles correspondingly are associated to minuscule Grassmannians. If you're just interested in the Jones polynomial, these vanishing cycles would just be a collection, a product of P1s, one for each cup, S2s. So perverse filtrations are wonderful to describe the action of grading of coherent shapes. In general, constructing grade group actions is very, very difficult. The reason Chuang and Roquier did what they did is that perverse filtrations are the right language to do so. And this is especially manifest for us. So using these very special properties of perverse filtrations and these various and the vanishing cycle brains, I showed in the first paper that not only do homology groups manifestly categorify corresponding link invariants, which you get for free, they're themselves link invariants. The reason perverse filtrations are wonderful is that proving this in the category of coherent sheaves essentially becomes a consequence of the fact that the statement is true in conformal field theory. This is because facts about fusion in conformal field theory govern the structure of this perverse filtration and tell you when some things are equivalent. Anyway, so the approach by coherent sheaves explains the origin of homological link invariants in geometry and physics in a manner that one works uniformly for all groups. So in principle, we could leave it at that. So recently, Ben Webster proved that homological link invariants that come from B-type brains on Rx are equivalent to the algebraic invariants he defined in 2013. Using a cylindrical version of the KLRW algebra. This KLRW algebra is an algebra of strings on a plane. And since our Riemann surface is a cylinder, this becomes strings on a cylinder instead. So as I said, in principle, we could leave it at that. However, neither the approach by coherent sheaves nor by KLRW algebras is really amenable to any calculations, and certainly does not stand anywhere near to the standard of what Kawamo's theory did, which is just such a simple thing to construct. So to solve the theory, we'll make use of homological mirror symmetry, more precisely, an equivariant version of it. So. Koncevich conjectured in 94 in his ICM address that the way to understand mirror symmetry is as an equivalence of categories of boundary conditions associated to sigma models on a pair of Calabi-Yau manifolds, one category of which comes from complex and the other from symplectic geometry. The category of brains coming from complex geometry is the one we just met, as the derived category of coherent sheaves, whose objects are simply B-type brains. the category of brains coming from symplectic geometry is what's called the derived Foucault category in general, whose objects are A-type brains supported on real or Lagrangian submanifolds of the mirror. So conservative homological mirror symmetries conjecture that category of B-type brains on X is equivalent to category of A-type brains on Y. And the morphisms, so objects are brains and morphisms are spaces of open strings between. Now, in the very best instances, one can actually make homological mirror symmetry matters. And then both theories based on X and Y become solvable exactly. So one of the simplest examples of homological mirror symmetry is to take our X and Y to be a very simple pair of Calabi-Yau manifolds, which are simply a pair of infinite cylinders. So here, the torus fiber is simply a circle and the common base is a real line. The categories of brains on the two sides turn out to be each generated by a single brain. On the side of X coherent sheaves, it's simply a single brain wrapping all X, a structure sheaf of X. And on the mirror Y, it's a real line Lagrangian, just a real line brain stretching along the cylinder. Now, while the two red brains look very different, the algebras of open strings turn out to be the same. The algebra of open strings in both cases is simply the algebra of functions on a complex cylinder. To see this on the side of Y in A-type brains, you need to make sure to properly define the category of brains in a non-compact manifold. And the way to do that is it's what's called a Raf Foucault category. Anyhow, so the generators of this, the elements of the algebra are just Laurent polynomials in X, and they correspond to intersections between the brains, where you can see here explicitly 1, X, X squared, X inverse, X to the minus 2, and so forth. To understand that these are exactly X squared and so forth, you need to compute the product. And the product turns out to exactly tell you that what you're getting is algebra functions on the cylinder. So this way, the algebra functions are the same. And it turns out that the fact that the algebras of open strings are the same means that the entire category of brains, the categories of brains themselves are equivalent. They're both equivalent to the derived category whose objects are complexes of representations of our algebraic. So the simple example is the model of how you hope to understand homological mirror symmetry in all cases. So ordinarily, in our world, for our X, which is moduli space of monopoles, the non-equilibrium mirror of X, which is moduli space of monopoles in R3, is a hyperkähler manifold, which is to a first approximation given by a hyperkähler rotation of X. More precisely, Y is also moduli space of G monopoles, just an R2 times S1 with a potential. So ordinary homological mirror symmetry relating X and Y should be understood as a consequence of equivalence of a pair of categories, where the category of brains on Y is an appropriate version of derived Foucault category of Y. Now, Webster's proof of equivalence of categorification of quantum link invariants via B-type brains on X and via the KLR double algebras, or their cylindrical version, is really the first of two equivalences of homological mirror symmetry, where D sub A is the derived category of modules of the algebraic KLR double algebra. Now, we won't try to describe the derived Foucault category directly. Rather, we'll make use of one further simplification that's available in the present setting. And the story will proceed by sequentially using simplifications that exist in our present setting and do not work for a generic category and generic mirror symmetry setting. So recall that X is the moduli space of monopoles on R3, where symmetry that corresponds to rotations of C in R3 plays a key role. That's how we got Q into the problem. The simplification we'll use first comes from the fact that working equivariantly with respect to the symmetry, all the relevant information about the geometry of Rx must be contained in a locus preserved by the symmetry. The core, what I call the core locus, is a subspace of half the dimension where all the monopoles, singular or not, are at the origin of C and at points in R. So this subspace is a holomorphic Lagrangian in X. And so now we have two X's, the big X, the original monopole moduli space, and the small X, the one half of dimension. So we'll call the big X, and the small X, the small X. So we'll define the equivariant mirror of the big X, and we'll call it the small Y, to be ordinary mirror of the small X. So we really have a rectangle of mirror symmetries, the upstairs mirror symmetry for the big and small for the big X and Y, the downstairs mirror symmetry for the small X and the small Y. And because the downstairs theory should know everything about the upstairs theory, we also should have relations going up and down, and in particular diagonally. And it's diagonal relation that we'll call equivariant mirror symmetry. There are many things that people mean by equivariant mirror symmetry. This is what we will mean by it. So while the small x embeds into the big X as a holomorphic Lagrangian of half the dimension, the big Y fibers over the small Y with holomorphic Lagrangian C star to the D fibers. Okay, so as I said, we'll define the equivariant mirror of the big X to be the ordinary mirror of its core. So the key fact is that the bottom row has to have as much information about the geometry as the top. It's just more efficient to package. For one, it's packaged in the space of half the dimension, which is already a simplification. So a model example to keep in mind is to take the big X to be a resolution of an a n minus one surface singularity. This big X is a moduli space of one smooth SO3 monopole in presence of m singular ones on R3. For such big X, its core, or the thing that I call the core, again, various notions of the core in the subject, but this is what I call the core, looks like a collection of m minus one p1s with a pair of infinite disks attached. The ordinary mirror of the big X is a big Y, which is a complex structure deformation of what's called multiplicative m minus one surface singularity with a potential that we won't need. It's multiplicative because it comes from monopoles on R2 times this one. So this multiplicative am minus one surface is a C star vibration over Y, small y. This small Y looks like an infinite cylinder with m marked points in the interior. And at the marked points, the C star fibers of the big Y of the small degenerate. So you will have noticed that Y, the small Y, is a single copy of the Riemann surface square conformal block split. We have one smooth monopole, and essentially Y is a configuration of one smooth monopole on R times S1 in presence of M singular ones. Now, more generally, the equivariant mirror, the small y, is a configuration space of points colored by simple roots of the Lie algebra, but otherwise indistinguishable, one for each smooth monopole on the Riemann surface where conformal blocks live, with some loci deleted and some singularities resolved, including the T equivariant action on the big X or the small x, corresponds to adding to the sigma model a specific potential, which is the multi-valued holomorphic function. In particular, turning off the equivariant actions, the potential vanishes. So from the mirror perspective, the conformal block of the affine Lie algebra is a partition function of a beach-vested theory on this infinitely long cigar with a tie boundary condition at infinity corresponding to a choice of Lagrangian in Y. Or a complex of Lagrangian. Such amplitudes have a following form. There are integrals of the top holomorphic form on Y together with e to the minus W, or Landau-Gisbrück potential, because adding the potential makes the theory into Landau-Gisbrück model, together with insertions of some Landau, some chiral ring operators. The integrals, so this is a generic fact. In our specific context, the integrals that arise are representing conformal blocks of the affine Lie algebra, are simply the free field representations of conformal blocks of the affine Lie algebra. They go back to works of Fagin and Frankel in the 80s, and also Shefman and Varchenko. So if you want, mirror symmetry explains why such representation exists, given all the things that we've said. So again, corresponding to a solution of the Kz equation is an A brain at the boundary of the cigar at infinity. This brain is an object of category of A brains, which is known as the derived Foucault cyclic category of Y with potential W. We will use this formulation of the category and not the one by a slightly different formulation of the category of A brains formulated by Gaiotto, Moore, and Whitten. But the more familiar, much older derived Foucault category. So in our context, one can describe this category very explicitly, thanks to the fact that Y is a cousin of configuration space of colored points on the punctured Riemann surface. So objects of the category of A-brains are products of one-dimensional curves on the Riemann surface colored by simple rules. This is a slight simplification. One also needs to include brains that look like simplices. So there are intervals on a Riemann surface with collection of colored points running along them. And also in general, more abstract iterated combs over actual Lagrangians, actual Lagrangians. So, but anyway, in any category of A-brains, the space of morphisms between a pair of brains is defined by Floor theory, which is modeled after most theory approaches to supersymmetric quantum mechanics. The role of Morse complex from the beginning of the talk is taken by the Floor complex, which is a vector space spanned by intersection points of the Lagrangians, graded by the cohomological and equivariant degrees, thanks to the fact that W is multivalued. The action of the differential on the space of perturbative supersymmetric ground states is, as always, generated by instantons. In Floer theory, the coefficient of the action of a supercharge on one, the coefficient of one intersection point in the action of the supercharge on another is obtained by counting homomorphic disk instantons in Y, interpolating from one intersection point to another of fermion number one and equivariant degree zero. You need equivariant degree to be zero simply for the potential to give a function on the disk. The cohomology of the resulting complex is a space of morphisms between the brains in Y, defined in this way. A vast simplification in the present case is that just as brains have a description in terms of the Riemann surface, so do the intersection points, as well as the maps between. The theory which results is a generalization to arbitrary simply laced Lie algebra of what's known as the Hager-Floer theory. Hager-Floer theory is associated to GL1/1 and categorifies the Alexander polynomial. It is phrased in the same one-dimensional terms and famously, exactly solvable. So in the present case, every home, as in Hager-Floer theory, Every holomorphic map from a disk to Y projects with non-negative multiplicities to domains on the Riemann surface with boundaries and one-dimensional Lagrangians and vertices at the intersection points. So as in Hager-Floer theory, for general G, you can read off from the domains on the Riemann surface the cohomological or equivariant degrees, or both the cohomological or Fermi number and the equivariant degrees of the map to Y, as well as the degrees of all the intersection points. So for example, if you take the Lie algebra to be SU2, the mass, the Fermi number of this turns out to be a disk between a pair of intersection points in the theory of two colored points on the Riemann surface. And the above disk has cohomological degree zero, which you read off by computing the Euler characteristic and counting the number of acute and obtuse angles in the disk. And in general, it works that way. Now, mirror symmetry helps us understand which questions we need to ask of our theory to recover homological invariance from Y for arbitrary simplest Lie algebra. Now, I said here for arbitrary simplest Lie algebra, in fact, the story of Y and essentially everything I say has a generalization to arbitrary simple Lie algebras, and in fact also Lie superalgebras. The fact that a Lie superalgebra enters is obvious from the fact that we already use GL1/1, but in fact it's a general fact. Anyway, so since Y is the ordinary mirror of the small x, small y is the ordinary mirror of the small x, we should understand how to recover homological invariance from the small x instead of the big x. We know what to do on the big x. What do you do on the small x? So a fortunate fact is every B-type brain on the big x that you need for the problem comes from a B-type brain on the small x via a functor that simply interprets a B-type brain on the small x, which is a subspace of the big, as the brain in the bigger space. That functor has what's called an adjoint that goes the other way and corresponds to tensoring with the structure sheet of the core and restricting. Adjointness of these functors means that even any pair of brains on the big X that come from the small X, computing homes between them upstairs, the homes between them upstairs are the same as the homes downstairs, except for a correction. You can't simply compute the homes between the brains they came from, F and G. Instead, you need to take one of the brains downstairs and take it on a trip. You send it up and back down. And this functor is not identical. What's fortunate is that in our setting, we'll be able to compute it explicitly. We know exactly what it does. So at any rate, equivariant homological mirror symmetry that relates big X and small y, or what we call equivariant homological mirror symmetry here, isn't an equivalence of categories, but it's correspondence of brains and associated vector spaces, morphism between them, that come from a pair of adjoint functors. They come from composing what you get from going vertically up and down with downstairs mirror symmetry. Now, to explain how these functors are computable, recall our example of Y, which is equivariant mirror to the AN surface. Mirror to I vanishing P1 in X is a Lagrangian that's simply an interval brain between a pair of functors. The functor that goes up amounts to pairing the downstairs brain. So we can also compute, since we have this rectangle of mirror symmetries, here it's convenient to just go visually to understand what's happening, to just go up and down vertically. So we'll go up to the big Y. So the functor that sends you up to the big Y amounts to simply pairing the brain downstairs with torus fibers over it, which is how you get this picture of S2s in Y, which is a version of the AN surface. The functor that goes down doesn't send the vanishing sphere back to itself. Instead, computing it either by mirror symmetry or by Lagrangian correspondences and formulation. Actually, formulation of this entire block of mirror symmetries as joint work with Peng and Danilenko and Breen and Shande. So you find, instead, sending the brain down, you find a figure eight Lagrangian. Okay, so this theory comes from just SU2. It's a single SL3 monopole, sorry, a single SL3 monopole in the algebra SU2. Now, in fact, for any simple algebra, brains which serves as cups and cups upstairs in the big X originate from vanishing cycle brains of the downstairs theory, which are generalized intervals and project back down to generalized figure eights. Actually, if you want these super algebras, then things associated with fermionic nodes lead to ovals, not figure eights. But anyway, for ordinary simple Lie algebras, you get figure eights.
Can I ask a question?
So in this description based on Y, both the Lagrangian question? And the action of grading on them.
Can I ask a question?
What's the question? Yes.
So in the square diagram you were drawing, is the adjoint to the bedding going up on the X side mirror to the projection on the Y side?
Yes, you have a rectangle of correspondences. That's right.
Because one of the arrows was going up and the other was going down in the square.
So. Oh, no, sorry. So you have, good. You have a pair of arrows
right.
that go up and down.
So the joints are dual
diagonally.
On both sides.
Yeah. So on the B side, the construction of the functors is well known. The fact that these pair of adjoint functors exist is a textbook algebraic geometry. On the A side, they turn out to be new. Okay, this has not been actually considered before. And mirror symmetry, such applications of mirror symmetry considering upstairs and downstairs, has actually not been done. You could have computed this figure eight just by knowing the. In fact, we can do it both ways. If you understand what mirrors, you. Anyway, by now we can compute it if using the Hall rectangle. So in this description based on Y, its virtue is that everything is geometric. So both the brains and the action of grading on them is geometric. So you start with a projection of a link to a surface. You translate it into a pair of A brains by choosing a bicoloring of every link component by an equal number of brains of each color, so that red always underpasses the blue. Then mirror Lagrangians are obtained by replacing all the red segments by interval type brains, and all the blue segments by figure eight type brains. So this is the picture that you get for SU2. For other simple Lie algebras, you get these generalized figure eights as the figure eight brains, this collection of figure eights. And for the interval brains, you get these intervals with colored points running along. The homological link invariant is a space of morphisms between the pair of brains, graded by homological in few degrees. To evaluate the Euler characteristic, you simply count the intersection points of Lagrangians, keeping track of gradings. And keeping track of gradings in this theory is a completely combinatorial thing. The fact that for SU2, the graded count of intersection points computes the Jones polynomial is a theorem of Bigelow from the 90s. In fact, he also discovered a story for SUN and knots colored by the defining representation. Now, one virtue of our theory is the dimensions of complexes of vector spaces with the action of differential, whose cohomology is the link homology, grows only polynomially with number of crossings in our case, which should be compared with co-exponential growth in Kohanov's case. However, in Kohanov's case, he has a completely explicit description of the differential. What's ours? As in Heger-Floyd theory, computing the action of the differential can be translated to a sequence of well-defined but hard problems in complex analysis in one dimension. They're essentially applications of the Riemannian mapping theorem. Okay. Now, surprisingly, this problem can be solved. So, we'll solve all the discounting problems at once by making use of homological mirror symmetry that relates the downstairs mirror pair. Okay. The fact that mirror symmetry sums up curve counts for you is its basic property. So As in simplest examples of homological mirror symmetry, the categories on the two sides are generated by a finite number of brains. From perspective of Y, the generating set of brains are products of real line Lagrangians colored by simple roots. So this is a simple generalization of the very simplest example of mirror symmetry for the cylinder. Okay. We'll just have, since our target isn't just a single cylinder, but product of cylinders or symmetric products of cylinders, here we get product of real line Lagrangians to describe a single brain in Y. So the associated algebra of downstairs algebra of open strings is a smaller cousin of the upstairs KLRW algebra. It's smaller because the target is half the dimension. So this algebraic description of link homology based on the small algebra A has a geometric mean. By virtue of this equivalence of the derived category of modules of an algebra and your derived Foucault category, any brain in Y, and in particular the braided cap brains, has a description as a complex, every term of which is a direct sum of these real line Lagrangians, the T brains, where the maps and the complex are gluing prescription. They tell you, they tell you how to start with a collection of T brains and glue them together to a brain of interest. The complex that describes this braided figure eight brains turns out to deliver the link homology without any further work, encoding in itself all the necessary discounts. So for any simple Lie algebra, including super algebras, the link homology can be read off directly from the complex describing the brain. So this is the fact that you don't need anything else is a consequence of a fortunate fact that the vanishing cycle brains, the interval type brains, are among those brains that the I brains and the T brains that are real line Lagrangians and the I brains that contain the vanishing cycle brains form a Kozul dual set. They're Kozul dual set because they're both, they're respectively left and the right symbols of the potential. And correspond to, the I brains correspond to simple and the T brains to projective modules of this algebra A. The one important subtlety here, which is very important for making the theory solvable and it held us up for 9 months, is that the set of symbols, which are actual critical points of this potential, which are in one-to-one correspondence with the size of the K theory of X and then weights and some weight space, is actually not enough to generate the whole category. This potential that we need here has what are called critical points in infinity. And including contributions of these critical points in infinity is completely, is entirely necessary to be able to eventually get these complexes. So, but anyway, once you have the complex, you get for free the complex of vector spaces with the action of the differential that squares to zero. So the fact that having this complex, and so you're trying to compute homes between this braided figure eight brains and the interval type brains. So from the braided figure eight brain, you, in general, you get a complex like this, a complex that looks like this always. That's a piece of homological algebra. However, in a general setting, this complex is not really a complex of vector spaces. It's a complex of complexes. So you need spectral sequences to compute it. Here, the fortunate fact that the I brains and the T brains are Kozul dual set means that you get complex of vector spaces on the nodes. The vector spaces are the intersection points. And you get the action of the differential that squares to zero. The fact that the differential squares to zero is what it means for the original brain to be a well-defined brain. So the link homology is cohomology of this complex. So for any, so in general, we get link homology as a very small known piece of the complex that describes the brain. How small? Very, very small, because the vanishing cycle brain is only is a single eye brain that is dual to a single T brain that arises in this complex. In general, there are many different T brains that enter the complex to build the whole brains. So the only non-vanishing part of this, in general, very large complex is a tiny thing. The only non-vanishing part that contributes to link homology is a very small thing. I'll give you an example in a moment. Now, however, we're still not done, okay? We need one more step to make the theory computable. So this making the theory computable is the joint work with Rabchuk and Eliza Lepage. So in general, finding a projective resolution of a brain is a difficult, even though solvable problems. This is one of those problems in mathematics that are just solvable, solved. But if you try to do it in actuality, it's impossible. Okay. So first, you need to compute which module of the algebra the brain maps to by the Yaneda functor that sets up the correspondence between the derived category of A modules and Foucault's idle category. And then you need to find a projective resolution of this module. So given any module of an algebra, in principle, you can find its projective resolution by what I call the bar resolutions, but they're horrible things. In all known examples, you can't actually work with those. So in our case, it turns out that both of those problems, which module you get and finding its resolution, are solvable simultaneously. Thanks again to the fact that the target is a cousin of a configuration space of colored points on the Riemann surface. So the figure eight brains that we need are all products of one-dimensional Lagrangians on the Riemann surface. In one dimension, and only in one dimension, all cone maps are geometric. That's explained, say, in the second of the mirror symmetry book volumes. Okay. So in one dimension, all cone maps are geometric. So, so you can explicitly get a smooth brain by taking a pair of brains intersecting on a point, giving an expectation value to the corresponding tachyonic open string. Okay. Now, all our Lagrangians are products of one-dimensional things, one-dimensional ones. So as a consequence, almost all the maps in the complex that we need, in this complex, are geometric. You can simply read them off from the projection of the brain by stretching the brain out into real line Lagrangians. Almost all. The few remaining ones are found uniquely up to equivalence by quasi-isomorphisms, by asking, essentially gauge equivalence, by asking that the differential squares to zero in your algebra. And in fact, the downstairs theory knows everything. So it determines the resolutions, not just in the downstairs algebra, but also in Webster's KLR double algebra, by asking that the differential squares to zero in the bigger algebra. You can simply find it, deduce the missing maps. So as an example, for the trefoil, you'd get SU2, we'd get a following brain configuration. So for simplicity, we could ask about reduced covenant homology, where the unknown homology is said to be trivial. Setting the unknown homology to be trivial means that you get to delete a pair of Lagrangians in general. So in this case, this theory lived in the symmetric product of two points in the configuration space of two points on the Riemann surface. By erasing one, we get down to one-dimensional theory, which is kind of our running example. So the braided figure eight brain, you can simply stretch it out. So here, I have the Riemann surface. Our cylinder run vertically instead of horizontally as it did for the most of the talk. So we can take this brain and just stretch it out into straight line brains, okay? Then you easily see that it stretches out into straight line brains up to some junctions at infinities. These junctions at infinities are, if you remember this picture of the wrapping on a cylinder, they're exactly the intersection points at the two infinities, okay? One infinity at the bottom, the other infinity at the top. So every map here is actually an element of our algebra. So you get an explicit complex with all the maps in it. And here we're in one dimension. So as long as you're in the downstairs algebra, this is it. This complex guarantees the close on the nodes, and it does. Out of this complex describing the brain, only a tiny part contributes to trefoil homology. Why a tiny part? Well, you see this I brain that we need, the cat brain, intersects only this this T2 brain. The T3, the T4, and T1, it does not intersect at all. So the homs from T4 to I2 and T3 to I2 are all zero. The only non-zero home is a single one in one dimension from T2 to I2 in degree zero. So out of the big Mina? Complex, a small piece, I'm done, this is the last slide, is the Kovenov homology of the trefoil. So that's that. Yeah, sorry. Sorry, I think I ran over time. I apologize. Thank you.
All right. Are there any questions for the speaker? All right. Well, in that case, let's thank the speaker again. That was a really cool talk.